Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio, 930 WFMD, brought to us by Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? I'm Troy Skinner. I encourage you to visit us online at WFMD.com, keyword faith. You can email me, Troy@WFMD.com. If you do that, you might just see your email stuff posted on the blog, because my blog is your blog. Every day, Monday through Friday, you can go to the website, WFMD.com, keyword faith, and you'll find updated information. And shockingly, every once in a while, the information is based on something religious in nature. And I say that only kind of half-joking, because a lot of times it's political, or people, you know, talking about how great it was in the good old days as opposed to now, or, you know, pie recipes, or it's all sorts of interesting stuff. And I will say it has gotten increasingly interesting, so thank you for your emails. Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel. Thank you for being on the show again.
Good to
my
see you.
Friend, co-founder of the show, and also we'll talk about the feeding the those who are less fortunate here in a second. We'll
Great.
Do that in
okay.
a moment after we introduce
Excellent.
Our other guest. Ken Gosno is the area chair for the C-12 group in the D.C. area, which would include the Frederick County and surrounding areas.
Glad to be with you.
And he's also pastor at Restoration Point Christian Church, or The Restoration Point. That's what the hip people call it.
That's right.
Where do you go?
I go to the point, man.
The point. Where I go to the point. And I don't think I mentioned last week, what are my readings? I don't have to make up for that. I'm going to give one now and one at the end of the show. Because people,
okay.
they hang out for this
Two for
all
one.
Week. They want to know what I'm reading.
They're coming back.
Because they want to read what I read. God's Search and Rescue Plan by David V. Edlin. You read that?
No.
No?
It's a missions.
God's Search and Rescue Plan.
Kind of a worldwide
so you're going to have to read it to find out.
Yeah, I just read, like, the table of contents. You know, once I get another table of contents, I know what's in there.
As they flip through and see if there's a lot of pictures, I'm good.
That's right.
I'll read that book.
Yeah, that's right.
So, talk about Frederick 48.
Frederick 48, just like last year, this is a two-day all-Frederick event to see if we can raise more money than ever before for those charitable organizations in Frederick that are taking care of those that are most in need in Frederick. Did you know that last summer they did a community assessment of the needs that there are in Frederick, and they came out with clarification of needs in the area of homelessness, which you'd be amazed how many homeless people there are in Frederick. And then the issue of youth that are in situations that, because of poverty and parents working all the time, they are vulnerable to the wrong kinds of influences. And then finally, people that, because of health care situations that they face, poverty is breathing down their neck and about to make them homeless. And so those three areas is the big three. And so we're going to see if we can raise more money than has ever been raised in Frederick in a two-day period of time. It's going to be September 27th and 28th is when this is going to happen. So that'll be coming up this fall. We're very excited about it.
Going to raise more money than you can shake a stick at.
That's right. I just have never tried to shake a stick at money. Is that hard to do or something? I mean, where do you come from? Shake a stick at it.
You're going to shake a stick at that money.
Pick up one end of the stick, you pick up the other end.
So, Ken, you're the area chair for C-12. We spent quite a bit of time last week's show talking about what C-12 is. But real quickly, it's an organization where leaders of companies, either the owner or CEO or some big shot bigwig with a company, comes together to meet with other big shot bigwigs from other companies on a regular basis to
yeah, learn. But if they're a part of this, they can't be big shot bigwigs because it's right. all about Christ-like leadership. Yeah. So they have to be humble.
Humble bigwigs.
About it, right?
So that's why I'm not a member. Yeah. So they come together to learn how they could better run their business like Christ would run their business if he were running it, right?
That's right. They come together for encouragement and support. Because, you know, it's very tough to run a business. And a lot of times we find that our CEOs are very isolated and alone.
Right. And so lonely at the top.
It's lonely at the top.
I don't hear that to be true. I hear that it's really easy and these guys are just, you know, swimming in more money than they can shake
right.
a stick at.
Well, you're thinking about
it. And they're hoarding the money and they don't want to give their fair share. That's what I understand.
Right. I think you're...
these guys in the 1%? We just got to ask that question.
Yeah.
Is this the 1%?
This is not the 1%.
Not
this
quite.
This is the 1% Christian CEO.
Of the 1%?
Of the 1%. That's right. Most, you know, the reality reality is, I mean, our news has shown a lot of CEOs, and rightly so,
yeah,
of about these guys that hoard money and that get these gigantic bonuses. But that's not the reality of most businesses across this country.
Oh, man, that's a great question. Is it? My brother, at Christmas time this year, I sat with my dad and my three brothers, and we debated whether or not it is immoral for CEOs to get such high bonuses or not. And I had one brother in particular, the one that is the most involved with business. He's got the best business mind of all of us. And he argued that it was not immoral because it's just a measure of the market. And so if the market demands that you pay for a quality CEO that amount of money, then you get what you pay for. And so there's nothing, you know, inappropriate about it. How would you answer that question?
That's a great question.
Let's put you on the spot right out of the gate.
That's a great question. I would have a hard time making a judgment for every CEO in America.
Okay.
But I would say that for the most part, you know, when you have to think about your what you're gifted, whether it's a Rick Warren,
okay,
or whether it's a CEO that runs a company,
yeah,
it's really about the stewardship that's been given to you.
Rick Warren, by the way, America's pastor.
America's pastor, right? So it's really not about the money.
That was a nice tone of voice you used when you said that.
It's really not about the money that they make. It's really about the money that they spend. And my suggestion, encouragement, would really be looking at what are they doing with that particular money.
So if they're making that money like Rick Warren, you're upside-down tithing, you're right, giving 90% of it away and only living on the 10%, then it's okay to get that money. It's not immoral.
Absolutely. Why not?
But if you're spending it, so what percentage are you allowed to spend before it's immoral?
Well, I think that's one of those questions that you really – we chase that rabbit down that hole when we're looking at the wrong perspective. I mean, when we look at our congregations, Jonathan, maybe in your congregation,
yeah,
I mean, what do you tell people that's immoral? What percentage of spending – should they spend before they're being immoral?
Yeah, I mean, in my congregation, we have a few people that are, you know, how do I say it? You know, fit nicely into maybe the upper middle class,
right,
but the large majority of them are, they are the, you know, closer to a widow's mite kind of end of the
right
spectrum, where they're living hand to mouth and they're doing their best to.
But can't their, you know, spending be immoral too? I mean, if you've got a widow's mite person and they're going out and spending 90% of their income on lottery tickets or alcohol or some.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely has a potential to be immoral. Yeah. Huge potential. Whenever anybody's spending it on drugs or alcohol.
You heard it here first.
Yes.
If you're blowing your entire paycheck on lottery tickets, alcohol, and drugs, it has the potential to be immoral.
So you're telling me that it's how you spend it, not what you're buying.
That's correct.
Is there a difference?
Well, let's use I don't think he's a Christian. At least we don't have any well-known reason to say he's a Christian. A guy like Bill Gates.
Sure.
Right? He makes billions of dollars
right
every year.
Yeah. And does he still make money, or is he retired? What does he do now? Money's making money for him, I'm sure.
Yeah,
in a big way.
He still has a lot of money coming in.
Right? Yeah, somehow.
Sure. You know, Warren Buffett, all these really, really, really,
yeah,
really, really rich guys.
Yeah.
Right.
They're not giving 90% of their money away.
Right.
But do they have moral obligation to give it away? Is that the question?
The question is, when you have that kind of money,
right?
If we're going to have a show like this on the Frederick Faith Debate, we got to deal with this question.
Sure.
If you have that kind of money, and it's money that puts you at a standard of living that is way above most of, you know, the people that live in America, significantly above, then do you have an obligation? What are your obligations with those resources in terms of how you spend them?
Well, why are you limiting it to just America?
Is there, around the world? Yeah, well, this is the big question.
And that puts you and I in the upper 1% of the world.
Precisely.
So should we give away 90% of what we make?
And I think
to feed children in Kenya.
I think that's the real issue, because you look at the Bible and you see Solomon, for example.
Yeah,
well, Kenya's actually not doing so bad.
Solomon, do you know how much gold he got every year?
I don't.
25 tons of gold every year that he got.
That's a lot of earrings.
The dude had 12,000 horses,
right,
and then 1,000 wives.
Right.
But some people claim that because the Bible says in the law, it says that your kings are three things they're not supposed to do. They're not supposed to go down to Egypt to get horses. And he had 12,000 horses. They were not supposed to accumulate great amounts of money. And then they were, you know, not supposed to have too many wives. It actually said that, those three things in the law, and Solomon did all of it. So it would appear that the Torah, the law, says that you're not supposed to accumulate large amounts of wealth. I mean, what, though, I mean, is there an answer to that? Like, what, was Solomon correct, or did that lead him astray?
Well, I think obviously
he got led astray somewhere.
Yeah, he did get led astray someplace. But I think the wrong, my point is, I think it's the wrong question to say. If I think it goes back to the people thinking money is evil, and you know, the reality is that if you develop a good product,
yeah,
whatever it is, if
right,
you develop a widget, you develop computers,
yep,
whatever you sell, and everybody in the world needs it,
yeah,
and they pay you for it,
right,
you're going to make a lot of money. And so it's not, the question isn't whether you should receive that money.
Right.
The question is, what kind of stewardship are you doing once you receive the money that you're receiving because you're running a good company?
So let's define stewardship. Okay. What is good stewardship
but
entail?
Let me go back to this point I want to make earlier.
Yeah.
Most CEOs that we deal with, that are CEOs in this company, in this country, are not the multi-million dollar CEOs that are reported in the news. Most of the CEOs that I've dealt with and that our C12 deals with, and the reality, most small business owners, the last few years haven't taken much of a salary. They've gone without, living off their reserves so that they can keep their companies afloat. And I think that needs to be the perspective, that when we think about CEOs and business owners, is it is tough to own a business.
And I
it's tough to run it.
I mean, some people who listen to this show know, some people who listen to this show don't. But, you know, what I do to make money is I sell advertising for this and this radio station, our sister station, WFRE. And a lot of the local business owner people these last couple of years that I'm dealing with that are trying to grow their business, they're either not taking a salary or they're taking way, way less salary than, you know, they get accused of taking. You know, their business might generate $1 million a year in revenue. So people are like, oh, they make $1 million. No, they don't. You know, they got to pay rent. They got to pay for their vehicle maintenance and their gas and their insurance. And they got to pay their employees and they got to buy materials and they got to deal with the problems of not getting paid, getting stiffed by customers.
Right.
You know, they do a big $20,000 job that costs them maybe $12,000 in hard costs and they don't get paid. They get stiffed.
Right.
And they got to eat that. And if all these challenges that they're facing, and before you know it, maybe they had enough to carve out for themselves in a regular year, $100,000 for them to live on, but now it's not a regular year, and they're like, they're living on $20,000.
Right, exactly.
It's not, I don't know if that's the norm, but it's certainly not unusual. It happens
so
a lot.
So Proverbs says, if you find a man skilled at what he does, you'll note that he serves before kings, not before obscure men.
That's right.
So this idea that whatever you do it with all your heart is under the Lord, you do it with skill and with excellence, is, and that you would get compensated for that, I think is a very godly and biblical idea. You know, that's a whole Protestant work ethic. You know, that you work hard, you work smart, and you end up producing something that adds value, you know, to society in general in a significant way, and that you would, you know, the worker's worth his wages, that you would benefit from that. And so, you know, there's definitely a sense that that's the case. However, well, I guess I was going to say along those lines that there's even those CEOs that don't spend their money righteously, the reality is that you can't work at that level if you're not working hard.
Right.
If you're not really busting your tail to get things done.
Right. And that's why, you know, and why we stress the importance of accountability.
Yeah.
Because many CEOs don't have accountability. There's nobody to tell the CEO sometimes what they're not doing, what they should be doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they can't go to their employees. Employees are not, because they're afraid they're going to get fired. They can't go to their friends. Sometimes their friends aren't courageous
enough
to do it.
Who's going to be honest with
them? So who's going to be honest with them?
Yeah.
Well, another business owner that's lived that lifestyle, that's made those mistakes, called together in accountability with the Christian perspective to keep each other accountable.
Oh, now I'm going to call you out, Pastor. Churches need that too.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's
you got to
exactly
be in some
right.
kind of a network of accountability.
Absolutely.
So that you make those connections.
Which
yeah.
is what this group is about, because we're iron sharpens iron. And that's why we need accountability and support.
And by the way, there are people that have positions of high influence. Okay. They might run or own a company or whatever that do not work hard. As a general proverbial type of a rule, it's true that people in those positions are working hard and they deserve and earn the money they have coming to them.
Right.
But there are people that are slackers that are in positions of authority that phone it in literally, if that, like, you know, they maybe never show up to work, or when they do, they cause problems for their employees.
Sure.
And yet they rake it in. I mean, a classic example of this would be somebody who inherited the company from dad, right?
Right.
Dad and mom built that thing up from scratch, turned it into this really profitable, and then they hand the business over to Sonny.
Yeah.
And Sonny just, like, lives off of mom and dad's hard work, and 20 years later, that business doesn't exist anymore because he drove it into the ground, but he made a lot of money in the meantime.
Sure, right. Sure. But that's the point, that if the company is growing at any level whatsoever, it's because, you know, somebody's
worked hard,
working hard to move that along.
You know, somebody is. It doesn't mean it's the leader who is, though.
Yeah,
right?
I agree that. Yeah.
I'm just saying that because there are.
Yeah, no, you're making a good point.
There's going to be somebody listening and say, well, the person who owns my company is a jerk, and that Schweitzer guy. And, you know, there are exceptions to these proverbial rules of truth, right? So
how much is the exception, you think, in that sense, and how much is the rule?
It's a fallen world, so it's a lot higher than I'd even care to try to contemplate, I think.
Yeah, I mean, of companies that increase in profitability, do you think that are led by slackers? I mean, companies that are decreasing in profitability, you know, there's going to be a measure of slacker at the top somewhere.
Well, look at all the graft that takes place. You have companies that make a ton of money because they've got a relationship with somebody like on the inside of the White House or some congressman or something, and they get a lot of government money funneled their way. They're not working hard for that, but their company's turning a huge quote-unquote profit every year.
Yeah.
And they're not doing it honestly through hard work. They're doing it through deception and lies, right? So.
Right.
And look what happened with the GSA. Right, the people running the GSA go off on this nearly million-dollar party over in Vegas.
Man, was that embarrassing.
And who knows all the other money they've wasted, and they're making a lot of money.
Yeah.
They can't even be fired, apparently. It's ridiculous, the things that you hear.
Right.
And they didn't work hard for what they made,
and then that whole prostitute scandal down in wherever, you know, again, where people have responsibility and they're phoning it in, or they're, you know, letting their selfishness get in the way of their job, their own desires.
But, you know, I take from those two stories an important biblical value that we talk about, and that is what you reap, what you sow, right? Here was two examples of these flawed characters that were reaping those flaws now. I mean, they thought they were getting away with it, but eventually it's going to come to the light. Everything we do is going to come to the light eventually.
Okay. So let's drive down to.
But sometimes only at the judgment seat.
Right.
But isn't that?
Yes, that's the case.
Absolutely.
And so this drives down to a worldview that drives a significant number of people that we would identify as being on the left of the political stream, and that is that those people that have money, every single one of them, got it in a immoral manner. They didn't get it by working hard. That the United States, the fact that the United States is wealthy is because we oppressed people in order to get here. And so therefore all prosperity flows from injustice.
Right.
And so how do you answer that? Is that the case, that all prosperity flows from injustice?
Absolutely not.
But why not? Like how would you prove that?
Well, I would prove it in the fact that, you know, when we talk about the best businesses and the people that make a significant impact, really are ones that have, we would call it having an eternal perspective. I mean, if you think about the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5, Paul writes to the church there and he says, you know, we should live by the fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against these things, there is no law.
Right?
And can you think about...
So you can be that way in business?
Absolutely.
Come on, man. We got to make it happen. We got to get things done around here. How do you be patient in that kind of environment?
Well, I think that's self-control. There's a sense of having a higher perspective. It isn't being a slave driver. It isn't beating the whip, but it's having a challenge and encouraging people. I mean, all the best books tell us that, business books that are not Christian tell us that people are motivated. They're not necessarily always motivated by money. Money's usually second or third or fourth on the list. They're motivated by higher, deeper moral values. And I would suggest and say to any business owner or company, or as we look at it, that what company that's driven by love, that's driven by goodness, by self-control, by patience or peace, wouldn't succeed? I mean, if you developed a company like that, your employees couldn't wait to get to work because they want to be in that kind of environment. Company cultures that have modeled that, even that are not Christian, companies like Zappos and Amazon, some of these that have modeled that higher level of values that are really
good. Except for in China, where they're building all those things. Sorry.
Are the ones that people want to work with, right?
Yeah.
And so it's that higher level of value. So I would say that, yes, there are some companies that are immoral. Yes, there are some CEOs that are immoral. Yes, there's companies that are going to be built in immoral ways. But I don't think our country was founded in that. And I don't think the bulk of companies across the country are trying to live immorally. I would say that if they are, eventually, what they sow, they will reap.
This is the thing. My sense when I look at history is that Marxism arose... communism arose in a portion of the world whose capitalism was the most greedy. And that here in the United States, there was greed, and we had problems with greed, but it was of a whole different nature compared to what they had in Eastern Europe, where communism and Marxism arose. And that when people give themselves over to greed, as opposed to what you're describing, what happens is you lose any hope whatsoever that prosperity can be used for good.
Right.
Because you have generations of people that have lived under oppression and tyranny and greed, and as a result they lose any memory of a vision of a higher way to live. And the fact that you're even describing this to me, I can, you know, I bet there's a bunch of people out there that are cynical that are like, you know, it's nice to talk about, but, you know, it's just not happening, you know, or else they're saying, well, you know, it's only 3-5% of the CEOs out there that care about this. The rest of them are all good for nothing.
Right.
But this is the hope for any kind of a prosperous society, is leaders of those companies that really understand that the best way, the most prosperous way to live is in a way that is humanizing to the people that live there, in a way that treats them with gentleness, respect, you know, with dignity, with, you know, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, you know, the fruit of the spirit.
Absolutely.
I mean, the vision for that is huge, and if you can walk that out in business, you know, how many people would rather work for you than work somewhere else?
You know, the real test of that is maintaining that eternal perspective that you alluded to a bunch of times, Ken,
that's
right?
It.
Because Ecclesiastes teaches us that things don't always work out the way that, you know, the Proverbs tell us that they should.
Yeah.
Right? The counterbalance to Proverbs.
Job is as well.
And Job didn't do anything wrong, and look what happened to him.
Yeah.
Right. You know,
Satan.
So these businesses, they're going to do the right thing because, proverbially speaking, if they do the right thing, they'll get that back. You reap what you sow. So good things come back to those who give, right?
That's right. Oprah told us about that.
Givers get, kind of thing, right?
Right.
However, sometimes givers don't. Sometimes givers get taken advantage of. Sometimes givers lose, because we live in a fallen, broken world. And so the temptation is to, well, the other guy's getting by because he's cheating.
Yeah.
So I owe it to my employees. I'm just going to have to cheat too, because I don't want them to be, you know, unable to feed their families.
Right.
And to fight against that and say, you know what, whether we all starve to death or not, we're going to honor God.
That's exactly right.
Right?
And have that eternal perspective. That's exactly right. We call it the racing towards the Bema seat, the judgment seat of God.
Huh.
You know, it tells us in the Bible that at the Bema, we're going to be judged on the works that we've done since we've been saved. And having that perspective as a business owner, we believe that God has placed that person, gifted that individual with leadership skills, abilities to run an organization, and that they should be focusing on that return of investment at the Bema, the ultimate goal, right? Mm. So what they face temporarily here, maybe they'll have great wealth, maybe they won't, but what's their eternal return on investment?
And if you have to have faith to live like that as a family, imagine what kind of faith you have to live like that as a business owner as well. I mean, it's a significant level of faith.
And
if you're serious about it, I
alluded to it toward the end of last week's show, and I'm going to do it again. It's the same thing you guys as pastors have to deal with, right? There's lots of times when you're tempted to cut corners and try to do things that are pragmatic, because it'll be good. You trick yourself or try to talk yourself into it'll be what's best for the church, even though
I'm not sure the scripture is going to support this decision I'm making. It's the practical, pragmatic decision to make. I'm going to make. You face this. We all face those same struggles, right? We all.
Every time you go to do any kind of marketing, you're tempted to fall back into doing it just to build your church instead of building the kingdom. Right.
That's the voice of Jonathan Schweitzer, senior pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel, joined this week by Ken Gosnell, area chair of the C12 group, also pastor of the Restoration Point Church here in Frederick. I'm Troy Skinner. Our sponsor is Putman Plumbing and Heating. How can we make you smile? What have I been reading in addition to God's Search and Rescue Plan? Judging Others, a little booklet by Ken Sand or Sandy. I'm not sure how he pronounces his last name.
I think it's Sandy.
Hey, it's Jonathan, Sandy. I'm going to send you a book that you should add to your list. It's called A Light Shines in Babylon by Buck Jacobs.
I'm going to read that. All right. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
Here at Putman Plumbing, we make a living by servicing our customers' needs, but we make our life by how we service our clients. The Putman Plumbing Way combines value, ethics, honest answers, and amazing service because we believe you deserve it. Putman Plumbing, how can we make you smile?